Hello and welcome to episode 388 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today is December 18th, 2023. I am Rollo McFlugel, and with me is my co-host Slappy Jones. Show notes page for this episode will be mcflugel.com/388. So you might have heard me pause ever so briefly right there, and that was because for once I actually knew what episode number we were on before I started introducing the episode. But that kind of caused me to forget how I usually start the episodes. So I think I got it the same way. It doesn't have to be right. I mean, just because I do it all the time doesn't mean
you have to know what it is.
Yeah. So I got that going there. So it's amazing. You do something 388 times, and then when you start thinking about it, you can't do it. Anyway, we'll get right to it. Most important news. The Flyers are for real. They continue to be for real. I called it the beginning of the season. No one believed me, but they are, I think they're the best team since they lost to the Sharks in the league.
Yeah.
On a long point streak. Both goalies are playing very, very good hockey. Carter Hart's out sick, but Sam Harrison's coming in and just being a stud. Shut out the Detroit Red Wings 1-0 on Saturday, and they just keep rolling. They just keep winning. And it's funny. I saw I was curious. I Googled the NHL power rankings. And they had the Flyers, like, in the middle of the league. Somewhere between, like, 15. I think they were, might have been, I don't think they were as high as 14. But somewhere between, like, 14 and 17. And they had teams with, like, explicitly worse records that have not been playing as well as the Flyers recently above them. And I think it's just people can't admit that the Flyers are a good team.
They've been playing real. I mean,
they have the best record since they lost to the Sharks, which was like
a they've been playing really well and looking really good.
Mm-hmm. Not giving up many
goals.
Like
winning fluky games. Even the games they're like the other night when they played the Red Wings, another just dominating game by the Flyers, and they only win 1-0. Mm-hmm. But they had chances. I mean, they didn't convert on some chances to put the game away. But they just played great all night until like, you know, when Detroit pulls their goalie and keep the puck in the offensive zone the entire time, it seemed.
Yeah.
Still didn't let a goal in.
Yep. Blocking a lot of shots, too.
Blocking shot. They're playing really well.
Playing very good defense, and I think that's mm-hmm. what's really most important.
Yeah,
offense,
it's huge.
Offense comes and goes, but it's really hard to win games 5-4 consistently. But if you can keep the other team, you know, below three goals,
you're going to win a
especially
lot of games.
In today's NHL, you're going to win a lot. Yeah, and they're one of the better defensive teams as far as giving up goals, even throughout the season. But they're on a streak where they haven't given up more than three goals in a long time.
It's been a while.
And their penalty kill is, I don't know, I guess it's up and still up in the top five.
It was lit when I remember the stat they flashed up the other night was it was fourth.
Yeah.
But they didn't give up any goals last night, so it could have only improved.
Yeah.
Unless some other team had a ton of them.
And their penalty kill was not great in the beginning of the year, but it's been just unstoppable. And they score shorthanded, too. They're for this stretch that they're on, I think on the penalty kill, they are a plus team. I mean, they scored more shorthanded goals than they've given up power play goals. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's really, really good. And so I think, what, they're 30 games into the season, I think. So that's
it's about right.
More than a third of the way through. And at this point, I think you got to say, you know, 10 games in, a team's, you know, 7-3 or 6-4, and you go, oh, they look good. I mean, there's a lot of teams that started off kind of hot. Like, I think the Ducks were, like, were pretty good in the start, and now they're at the bottom of the division. I think they just – now the Senators just fired their coach. So you see, like, these flashes in the pan and everything, but at this point, not that it's, you know, it's settled, but – you know, it's a lot. It's a log jam in their division for that kind of second through fifth place, I think.
Really? Yeah.
But my point is, it's not like the Flyers. It's like, well, there's still a good chance they're going to finish last in the division. Like, that's gone. It's way gone.
That would be pretty impressive if they did.
Yeah, it would be a monumental collapse.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's funny that there's some people that are upset. Flyers fans are upset because they wanted them to lose, and I think we talked about this before, to get a high draft pick. But I don't understand. Like, if you expected they were going to have a bad season or two, and they go ahead of schedule of that, like, it's not like they're an old team.
Yeah.
With no talent coming up. They're a very young team. They still got guys kind of waiting in the wings. Guys are still young. I mean, high draft picks are no guarantee they're going to pan out, as we've seen with the Flyers' last couple high draft picks. Not that JVR was a bad player, but when first overall was Patrick Kane that year, you know, there was a big drop off. Eagles play a big game tonight. Let's get the Seahawks of Seattle. So we'll see what happens there. If they, you know, if they decide that they want to pull ahead, remain atop of the NFC East, they will. They decide Correct. They want to keep it interesting. They feel bad that Dallas just got absolutely obliterated by a team that they beat. You know, maybe they take the night off again. We'll see. You know, the world's our oyster. But anyway, it seems like there's been some. There's been a little bit of talk about private keys in Bitcoin and securing it. There was another Ledger attack. I don't know. I forget if we talked about it last week. But it had a lot to do with one of the warnings we give about this kind of stuff is that when you have software or hardware that is designed to manage many, many different altcoins and stuff as well as Bitcoin, then you kind of dilute the engineering resources to, you know, coming up with good security for any of those things, and especially Bitcoin. And there was some sort of attack where people got their wallets drained using Ledger. So that's not great for them, but, you know, it's what you have to expect. You got to take care of yourself. You got to protect yourself. You got to be thinking about all the different ways that someone's going to attack you and figure out how to prevent those attacks and mitigate it. Just like if you think about trying to secure your own home from invasions and stuff or just whatever it is. If you're driving, you got to think about there's other people on the road. What are you going to do if someone makes a bad move and puts you in harm's way? How are you going to react? How are you going to protect yourself? And it's things like don't be low hanging fruit, if you will. Like, so, you know, keep your eyes on the road. Don't be playing around on your phone and that kind of stuff. Don't be distracted. Keep your eyes on the road. Know what you're doing. And so the same thing kind of goes for Bitcoin. Don't be easy bait for people. And so we got to.
Sounds like you're victim blaming.
Oh, yeah. But that's the thing, though. I mean, it's not like if someone steals your Bitcoin, like, that's bad. They should not have done it. And if there's some way to catch them, you know, we should return the stolen funds to the rightful owners. Just because you have bad practices. Like, if I don't know, if I've got my wallet hanging out of my my back pocket and someone comes by and swipes it because it's easy, yeah, I should have protected my wallet better, but it doesn't make the theft any more okay or less evil than it was if he was had to take a little bit more effort into doing it. But just don't give these people these easy opportunities. So we had a friend send me a text. He had a question about specifically about Yeti Cold. But this goes, it's a good question in general about like good Bitcoin hygiene. So the Yeti Cold level 3, at least, it's you set up two laptops, both run Core. One's the online one, one's the offline one. We've talked about a lot before. If you go search through our episodes in the past, you can hear some hear us talk about it. If you're not familiar with it, if you want some details. So the question is, for the Node laptop, should it be set up to run Core only, and the offline laptop is only used to sign transactions using a simple, basic version of Core? So let's go through this. Because it's kind of old hat for us to talk about this kind of setup. We've been doing it for a while. We've been talking about it for a while. We're comfortable with using Bitcoin and Bitcoin Core and everything, and we understand how it works. But for someone that's new kind of coming in, they might not understand the mechanisms of what's going on and why you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Slappy, you want to take a stab at kind of that not a stab, but you want to explain the setup? With having why you have two computers and what they're sure. for, what they're doing.
So you need a computer to communicate with the network. So that has to be online because, you know, you have to connect with the network. But you want to also have another computer that you can, you would wipe both of them clean, but wipe it clean, make sure nothing's on there. Basically starting fresh was, you know, we use Linux with Yeti Cold. And you don't, well, you connect it for, you know, you have to get Core on there. And then you turn off the internet. And that allows you to create keys without ever being online, without ever connecting to the internet from that computer. And that allows you to sign the transactions so that those private keys are never online. And that's, the general answer.
Okay. So you've got a computer that's offline that generates the keys and signs transactions, but like what's going on with that online computer? If you only got keys on the one computer.
It's the watch only, right? It's just kind of out there connecting to the network, seeing what transactions are happening and updating it.
Right. And so how are you using Bitcoin if the things that allow you to spend the Bitcoin are on the offline computer that's never going to see the internet?
So this is where I'm not a computer guy and my language will not be good, but you can, you know, this is all just code. So you can create a transaction. I guess you could write it out on paper. You still have to kind of put it on, you know, broadcast it to the network, but you would create a transaction and then take, you know, go to your offline computer to sign the transaction with your private keys, and then take that signed transaction and put it onto the online one, and then it can broadcast it out to the network, and you can see that, you know, this Bitcoin has moved from this address to this address or whatever the case is, but the keys are never exposed online because you just have the signed transaction.
Yeah, so what you can do with Bitcoin, which is pretty neat, is that so you have your private key.
Yeah, I was going to say we could probably back up even more. Like a private key is like that's like your signature.
Yeah, the private key is the thing that kind of derives everything. That's what allows you to create addresses and from those addresses sign transactions to move Bitcoin around. And so there are those private keys can also create public keys, and the public keys are what creates the addresses that you send out to other people.
How do you have a private, like you said, a private key creates a public key? How does that work?
So you send it through the cryptographic algorithm.
So some like giant math problem.
It's only solvable in one direction. Right. It's not like an algebraic equation. An algebraic equation, you have like 5x plus 2 equals y, let's say.
If you have one number.
Right. If I give you the value of x is 4, you can calculate the value of y. Likewise, if I give you the value of y, you can calculate the value of x. However, this is, you know, this cryptographic public-private key cryptography is an equation that's really only solvable, like I said, in one direction. So if you can if you have the private key, you can very easily solve to create a public key pair, and then you can associate like there's a way that it will create a new address each time you do it.
So
I guess you just add an integer to it, and it'll change it up. But in the other direction,
drastically, if you.
I'm just saying that, like, if you put your private key to create an address and you give it the integer of 1, it'll create the same address.
Gotcha.
And then if you give it 2, it'll create. So that's a way for your wallet to keep track of addresses it's created, so it doesn't like give out the same address twice. I think I have that. It's been a while since I looked at that, but I believe that is how it do it, because you can, like, if you I know on like a BTC Pay server, when you set up a watch only address there, it'll give you like 10 addresses, and you compare it to your the first 10 addresses on the software that you created the private keys with. And so the only way for you to there really is no way to back calculate given an address a public key to figure out what the private key is, unless you just have to brute force guess it.
Well, and, I've heard it described, and this helped me years ago, like a Sudoku puzzle. So if you do Sudoku, I don't know how to say it.
Sudoku,
whatever. You have the puzzle, and there's like a couple numbers filled in, and then you can complete. That's like your private key, and then putting it through SHA-256 is like solving it to get you to that public key, which is completed. But if someone gave you a completed puzzle, you can't go backwards, you know, assuming it was all in the same handwriting, same color, whatever. But you can't take a solved puzzle and go back to how it started, you know,
okay,
based on the puzzle. You know what I'm saying? Like if it was handwritten. Yeah, obviously you can see the printed numbers, but there's no way to take a completed puzzle and go back to what it was at the beginning. And that kind of made it make sense to me.
Yeah, and like you can think about it. Let's say you go up to a gate that's got a lock, and it's got a combination lock on it, and it's got three digits to it. Each of those three digits, it's a value between 0 and 9. So that means that there are 1,000 different combinations that you can make. So you can sit there, and after 1,000 times, you're guaranteed to, you know, be able to open lock, because you're going to go through every single number. And, you know, just going through that by hand, it's going to take a while. But let's say you had a computer to do that. A computer can go through and plug in that, you know, three-digit number into an equation and just do it incredibly fast. Like, I would imagine that would take under a second that it would figure it out, like a modern computer. The Bitcoin private key is such a large number that, given modern computing, it would, like, I forget the numbers off the top of my head, but it would like take millions of years, I think, before it could guess.
A long time.
Yeah.
There's more combinations than atoms in the universe.
There might be
in the world.
I know that it's around the same order of magnitude of you guessing my private key as if I picked an atom in the universe and you had to go find that individual atom.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah, there's a chance. So you can start trying to guess private keys. Probably not your best use of computing power and everything. So another, or saying all of that just to say that it's really, 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 really difficult to the point of impossibility that you're not going to just guess someone's private key.
Yeah.
Even if you have the public key. So you can create this public key that will create new addresses for you. And so that goes onto your computer on your Bitcoin node that is connected to the internet. And what the node is doing, it is like scanning the blockchain, or not scanning the blockchain, but it's connected to the other peers in the network, and it's pinging back and forth and saying, like, I have this group of transactions in my here. And as soon as it gets a new transaction from someone, it sends it out to someone else and says, do you have this transaction? If they say no, they send it over. If it says yes, then they stop asking about it. And it's asking back and forth as it's getting stuff. Do you have this? Do you have this? No, 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 no. And as blocks get propagated, it does the same thing with blocks. Hey, I have my chain tip is 742. That's how many blocks there are. Do you have 742? No, I have 741. All right, well, here's the latest one I have. Is it? And you send over the block header and everything, and it's like, oh yeah, this
kind of fits. Network.
Yeah, that fits the top of the chain I have, so it completes it. That works. All these things have to fit well. And if something's not, if I send you a block that is goes against all the blocks that you had before it, it's just going to reject it. Unless you can say, oh wait, I have these other blocks that show that I have a better chain tip than you. But that's getting into other details we don't need to talk about. And so yeah, it just the on-chain computer, it's running Core and then just like validating these transactions. So you can send someone. I'm doing it right now. I'm withdrawing some Bitcoin from an exchange, and on my online node, I created an address and I sent that for the transaction from the exchange to send the Bitcoin to, and it'll get validated by my node. And so why we do that, especially for, you know, larger amounts of Bitcoin holdings, is that we don't want someone coming in and stealing our Bitcoin. And so we keep the private key separate from it, so that, you know, like a computer is, you know, you go on the internet and do whatever. I mean, there's just like so much stuff going on that you're not really even aware of in the background. I mean, you go to a web page and it's loading all sorts of stuff. You know, you click on whatever, you don't actually really necessarily know what you're clicking on. You go to a website that looks like a website you've been on before, but you don't notice that the URL is slightly different and you are on a phishing website, and it's downloading all sorts of weird stuff and everything. So your daily driver laptop or your phone is just like probably full of malware and nasty stuff and stuff you don't know about and stuff you don't want on your computer. It's just the nature of being on the internet and using this stuff. And so because of that, because you're getting all this like weird spyware and malware and stuff that may not be like necessarily doing anything that you're really aware of. There might be stuff that's just kind of like dormant and sitting there waiting for something to happen, and it'll kind of do whatever. Maybe it's just like using your processing power to do some task. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of basically stealing your computer for labor. But let's say you go on a website and it downloads some software that looks for a wallet .dat file. And when it finds that, it sends it, like it opens it up and and sends that information back to somebody else. If your private keys are connected to the internet, then it could conceivably do that. Even though that you're not explicitly putting your private key into something stupid or something, whatever, it's you're exposing your private keys to whatever malware is out there. And so, even if some people might say, well, I put a passcode on my wallet. Okay. But, you know, you've got a password on there that's, you know, it's alphanumeric. So it's what, you know, let's say I'm guessing like 10 characters. And it can be what, 50, 62, like 70, 60 something different characters it might be. You know, that's something that a reasonable size computer can what's it called? Brute force guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that passcode's only really useful if you have like a physical attack where someone has it and they're just like sitting there on a computer trying to guess it manually. But if you give someone time, if you don't know that person has access to your private keys or your wallet, then they can just sit there and run it and run it and run it until they crack it. What was I going to say? I just lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. Like if someone steals your private key, like Slappy, I could have one of your private keys right now and have a wallet. Your wallet open with your private keys. And I'm just like sitting there watching. And until I do something, as in like spend it,
yep,
then you're not going to know that that's out there. Like your wallets are dumb. You can have as many wallets, yep, using the same private keys as you want. So what you do here, like we're saying, is that you just keep that, keep your private keys offline and like actually keep them offline, like plugging in whatever hardware has your private keys on it. Don't plug that into your daily driver or the online laptop, because there's all sorts of, you don't know what's going to happen there. And this is kind of like lower likelihood stuff. You know, there's, I think at this point, for there to be, I think any like Bitcoin specific malware is probably going to be related to phishing stuff. That you're probably going to have to go to, like we talked about before, someone was trying to download Wasabi wallet and they went to wasabi.com as opposed to wasabi.io. As opposed to whatever.
Yeah. Which is not like a crazy like.
No, it's something that could very easily happen.
Yeah.
Remember that, was it whitehouse.com thing?
I do.
Fortunately, I never had to experience that, but don't go to that website.
I don't know if it's still up and running, but
yeah, who knows? That was like years and years ago. That was a thing.
Grade school, man.
But yeah, whitehouse.gov. That's if you need to go to the press.
If you got to research the White House, go to the .gov.
Yes. So that's just like a classic because it works. It's because people don't pay attention to that kind of stuff, and it's easy, and it's very easy to just kind of download the user interface of a website. It's very easy to like what the website looks like. It's very easy to just clone that. And then you download something, you think you're getting something, and they can even like Wasabi.com, the fake website. They can when you click download wallet, it might actually download the actual Wasabi wallet for you too. But it's going to be downloading something else too.
Right.
It's not going to be good. And so that was the question that we got. I know we've been talking about a lot of stuff, but that was part of the question we got, is that should you only run Core on that online laptop? And the answer is yeah, pretty much. Now, I have what we could say is that only run Bitcoin specific stuff on that. If you're kind of a noob and you don't really know what you're doing and you're not really familiar with a lot of like software stuff out there, yes, only run Core. Don't run anything else. It's probably not worth it for you. That way, you know, if you only go on Core and that's it, you're not going on other websites and everything, it makes it pretty difficult for malware to get installed in your computer. And maybe they have like the way they would have to do it is like targeting your IP address or something, or I don't even know if that's possible, but it would be I'm sure people can break into home networks and everything, but it would be a lot more difficult, and you'd have to be a specific target for someone in order for them to do that, and at this point probably not very likely to do it. Just run Core because it minimizes your attack surface. Now on my kind of main node that I have, my online thing, I run some other software. I've got Join Market on it. I've got a Lightning node. I've got a couple other pieces of Bitcoin software on it. I also have the UPS uninterrupted power supply software. So it shuts down my node when I need it to. But I kind of, I'm managing that. I'm not using that computer to just do like day-to-day browsing.
WhiteHouse.com.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Not doing like day-to-day browsing and all that other kind of stuff and everything. It is only for Bitcoin stuff and specific Bitcoin stuff. And I try to make sure I do the best I can to manage that. So if you want, like, if you're kind of a noob and you want to play around with some other Bitcoin stuff, by all means, you can do that. But I would just invest in another computer, another laptop. They're cheap enough that you can go do that. Or even if you wipe it clean, the private key one, and you've got the backups, use that one. And then just when it's time to use those private keys, just make sure you wipe the computer clean again. I mean, it's, I know that might sound like, oh, what if there's residual stuff there? Well, it's not going to be. You would have to have some pretty bad malware, I guess, to have that happen. Probably not very likely. So I think that's basically the rundown, right? I mean, I guess to put a bow on the other question about the private key, it's not a simplified version of Core that you're using the offline computer with. It's just Core, but once it's downloaded Core, you take it, you remove the internet connection, and that just means that it's just not downloading the blockchain. Mm-hmm. But you don't care about the blockchain because
it still has the software there.
Right. It's got the Bitcoin software. Or Bitcoin Core,
which you can create keys with.
Yeah. But you don't need the blockchain to create keys.
You can sign transactions. It just doesn't broadcast it to the network, so you have to put it on the other one.
Yep. And so that's why you want to like make sure that when you sign on your offline computer, it's like the QR codes with the cameras and stuff. You might have to do something like, a USB stick or something to transfer between and everything. And that's where kind of the danger comes, is doing those
moving
stuff back and forth. And so that's why you want the computer that is on the internet that's only touching Bitcoin stuff, because you don't want to introduce the malware there, because that's when your private keys could get attacked, is when you're ferrying the unsigned transaction to and from your offline computer that has the keys. So, I mean, think about it. If you wash your hands, keep them very clean and tidy and everything, and then you dunk your hand into the toilet. doesn't matter how clean your hands were before that, you just touched toilet water. And it's, your hands are probably nasty now. So don't do that. If you got to stick your hand in the bowl, make sure that it's...
not the toilet.
Yeah. So.
Sound advice.
Yep. Pretty good. All right. So I don't really have anything else, Slappy. What about you?
No, I think that's, I hope that helps. I hope that helps people understand like the importance of having the two laptops and keeping one offline. Hopefully that makes sense. If it caused more confusion, let us know.
Yeah, but I think it's good to go back and go through the basics sometimes.
Yeah, definitely is.
It's good because it keeps our, you know.
I was just going to say, like, it's been a while since I kind of went through the basics of Bitcoin.
Right, and it's not that you don't know it anymore. It's not that you forget, but it's just to be able to explain it well.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's remember difficult. A couple of weeks ago, you were like, I got five questions to ask you. I'm like, oh, I didn't get these ahead of time. I don't know. Cause I didn't,
right.
I didn't know what they were going to be. I'm like, oh man, it's been a while. But thankfully I aced it. So what would I have gotten, a full Bitcoin or something, or
10 Bitcoins? I think
10. Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Man, I wish I were Alex Jones. Actually, that's not true. I don't wish I were him.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, I guess that's all I got. Oh, we have to figure out our next step. We do have something good that we're going to do soon as an episode. This next Monday is going to be Christmas. So, and then the day before is Christmas Eve.
Oh,
so we got to figure out a day to record.
Oh,
probably not on Christmas.
Probably not. I got to think about that. We'll find the time this week.
Yeah. My last day of work for this year is Thursday.
For this year.
Yeah.
So you're retiring?
No, not yet. Maybe when Bitcoin's at 45,000, I can retire.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that day.
Yep. That's going to be a bad day for the internet.
When you retire?
If I retire early.
Yeah, oh, that'd be awful.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week and go Birds.
Peace.